Castle, episode 631 for June 16th, 2020. Another End of the Empire by Tim Pratt. Rated PG.
Podcastle. I'm Hamilton Perez, a writer and freelance editor, as well as perfectly capable castle guard who definitely did not step on the wrong flagstone and find himself falling into a dank and ugly chamber. I'm simply self-isolating in the Flying Castle's hidden dungeon, by my own personal choice, of course. Fortunately, I was just on my way back from the archives when the floor gave out beneath me. And this episode is in no way a cry for much-needed help. Podcastle is very proud to present another Tales from the Vaults. This one recovered at no small risk to yours truly. But no risk, no reward, and today's story happens to be one of my favorites. Another End of the Empire by Tim Pratt. Originally published in Strange Horizons, and later appearing here at the Flying Castle all the way back in 2010. Tim Pratt is the author of more than 20 novels, most recently the Axiom Space Opera Trilogy, including Philip K. Dick Award finalist The Wrong Stars, The Dreaming Stars, and The Forbidden Stars. He's a Hugo Award winner for short fiction, and has been a finalist for Nebula, World Fantasy, Sturgeon, Mythopoeic, Stoker, and other awards. His latest collection is Miracles and Marvels. He tweets incessantly at Tim Pratt, and publishes a new story every month for patrons at www.patreon.com/Tim Pratt. Your reader today is Cheyenne Wright. Cheyenne Wright is the color artist on the Hugo Award-winning graphic novel series Girl Genius. A freelance illustrator of many fine tabletop projects, like Deadlands Noir and the Professional Elemental edition of the Pairs card game, he is not the lord of a subterranean colony of mole people bent on world subjugation. Such claims are libelous and unfounded, as is the ground beneath those who repeat them. You have been warned, sun-sucking dirtwalkers. More info about Cheyenne's current plans for a better world, all of them better worlds, can be found at www.arcanetimes.com. Now, let's shake loose our cobwebs and shackles, stretch out comfortably upon our hard stone beds, and enjoy the story.
Another End of the Empire by Tim Pratt. The Dark Lord Morgrash descended to his deepest basement, below the lower dungeons, below the magma reactors, below the well-warded and unquiet family crypts. He traveled down a spiraling path cut by a rockworm grown to enormous size by the Excessive Mining Research and Development Division, and he brooded as he went. Visits with the Sibyl of the Depths never ended well. Such consultations had heralded the end of his father's life, and his grandfather's, and his great-grandfather's, and even the ancient half-giant forebear who'd founded their rapacious lineage. The old creature only brought ill tidings. But there were dire prophecies regarding the consequences of even easing her into a retirement, let alone killing her and dumping her in a slither pit somewhere. Morgrash bashed open the door, scattering the heaps of knick-knacks and souvenirs from conquered shores his ancestors had brought as gifts to the crone, as if keeping her happy with trifles might spare them her grim visions. He stepped over a pottery tortoise and a miniature hut woven of grasses and knelt in the alcove where the Sibyl made her pronouncements. Greasy torches flickered into life, casting the room in long shadows. The blood-smeared curtain before him twitched aside, revealing darkness and the twin blue sparks of the Sibyl's eyes.
"You were summoned, and you came," she rasped.
Family lore said in her youth she'd had a euphonious voice, which had made the dread pronouncements even worse to hear. The rasp was more fitting.
"I am here," Morgrash said. "Give me the bad news."
"A child dwells in the village of Misery Chin, in the mountain provinces to the east. If allowed to grow to manhood, he will take over your empire, overthrow your ways and means, and send you from the halls of your palace forever."
Morgrash relaxed. This was, at least, not an immediate threat. Not like the pronouncements of metastasized bone cancer she'd given his grandfather. He sighed.
"So I'm expected to send my fell ragers to the mountains, raise the village, leave no stone upon a stone, enslave the women, and kill all the younglings to stop this dire prophecy from coming to pass."
"It's what your father would have done."
"Yes, but I'm more modern than he was. Besides, we've seen this happen 1,000 times. The attempt to stop the prophecy will make it come to pass, won't it? We'll think all the children are dead, but one will have been spirited away, or maybe he'll just be off in the woods gathering mushrooms. He'll be so traumatized by the destruction of all he holds dear that he'll vow to avenge his family and dedicate himself to my downfall, learning the subtle arts of the marsh witches and the blatant arts of axecraft, and in 10 or 15 years he'll have my head on a pike. Am I right?"
"Maybe," she said.
"Unacceptable."
Morgrash shook his head, clacking together the tiny skulls of pixie mages dangling from his braids.
"No, I'll find another way. The key here is innovation."
The Imperial Surveyors arrived in Misery Chin, a village of subsistence farmers and foresters whose women had a brisk sideline in making protective fetishes of hit-or-miss efficiency for the miners who labored over on the next ridge. The surveyors answered no questions, but proceeded to demolish the timbered central meeting hall. The villagers huddled in their hovels, waited for the inevitable deportation, drafting, or human sacrifice, all of which were known to occur regularly closer to the center of the empire. If the surveyors were here, that meant the Lord had some use for the village, and it probably wouldn't involve the inhabitants living there. Everyone had heard what happened over in Ragged Ledge not 2 decades past. Instead, the surveyors and their fabrication wizards built a beautiful new, airy, dome-like meeting hall of a lightweight silver metal and sheets of something like glass that could be darkened or made transparent at a custodian's command. A man the surveyors claimed was Lord Morgrash himself, though this was patently absurd. He'd never travel all the way out here. He must be a lowly official in disguise, addressed the crowd at the dedication ceremony.
"This new community center is just the beginning of the changes I'm bringing to Misery Chin. Beginning with the name itself, this place will hereafter be known as Progress Village. I have chosen your fair hamlet as the new experimental model for the perfect imperial society, and we will be building schools of the practical, magical, and piratical arts, and providing job training for all."
The Erstaz lord chuckled.
"I see the worry on your faces, but fear not. None of the retraining is compulsory. Apart from having homes that are better insulated and meals with something other than weevils for protein, your lives won't change unless you want them to. The old are set in their ways. I understand. The new advances are really meant for the children."
He grinned, and the people in the front row said his teeth were carved into tiny skulls. So perhaps it was the Lord himself.
"Attendance at school will, of course, be mandatory. It's important for the children to learn."
He waved a gauntleted fist towards the crowd of officials at his left.
"Address any questions or concerns to the overseers. But rest assured, I will be visiting from time to time to check in on the progress of the darling little ones."
And thus began the Golden Age of Plenty in Progress Village. There were only 30 children in the village, ranging in age from still suckling to 15, which was the Lord's cutoff age. Anyone over 15 wasn't a child anymore, but someone with the rights and responsibilities of an adult, as even the Sybil conceded.
And the girls can be dismissed since you let slip the he pronoun in your original prophecy.
Morgrash mused.
One of these 14 boys will be my downfall, then. I shall get to know them all wonderfully well.
You could just kill them, the Sybil grumbled. Nobody has any respect for tradition anymore.
Yes, but we both know the executioner would go soft and bring me lamb hearts instead of the hearts of children, to prove he'd done the deed. Even if I went in myself wielding my mighty trepanner,
his enchanted battle pickaxe,
there'd be some mistake. Or the boy would turn out to be a changeling with the real child living among the wood whimsies or something. No, better to keep them all under my eyes. The probability witches say this approach is the best chance of neutralizing negative results.
Probability witches,
the Sybil sneered. She'd emerge from her alcove to have tea, and she looked remarkably good for a creature countless centuries old. Not a maiden, but not the crone he'd imagined either.
As if you can tell the future with beads on strings and counting the chimes of bells and tossing dice endlessly in the air. You need blood and guts to get the attention of the gods.
I prefer my gods inattentive,
Morgrash said.
I'll bring you a jar of the local honey when I return from my next visit to the village. It's really quite good.
Things went well in Progress Village that first year. The people were prosperous, and having enough to eat and decent homes strangely made them work harder, violating the premise of the motivation through privatization on which most of the Empire ran. Morgrash gradually rolled out similar model villages throughout the Empire, focusing on the provinces where unrest was most common. He even made sure the slaves got enough to eat, and the need for extreme suppressions dropped by 70%. He had to put half the slaving corps on indefinite leave, and sent most of the rest to clear the ancient discredited swamp deities out of the jungles. So far, the dire prophecy wasn't proving all that dire, though Morgrash imagined that would change when one of the clever children tried to put a dirk in his eye and steal his crown away. The oldest children graduated from an accelerated course in management and were sent off to cushy apprenticeships in the Imperial City, once the probability witches determined none of them were the prophesized threats. The logarithms used by the witches were slow, but implacable, and the Dark Lord had no doubt they'd eventually home in on the specific threat. As the years passed, Morgrash spent more and more time visiting the village, usually without his retinue of monstrous bodyguards, as they made the locals nervous. And he even had a residence built there, only slightly grander than the mayor's house. Occasionally, he would go to the school as a guest lecturer and teach classes on geography. He'd been everywhere. History, he'd witnessed much of it. Political science, he'd reinvented it. And mathematics, though his examples tended to involve numbers like troop strength and ration supplies. Eventually, the probability witches narrowed the suspects down to three children. Meth, a pale and moody boy of 12, who enjoyed shooting birds from trees with a slingshot, and excelled at anatomy. Xander, a studious 10-year-old with some wispfolk blood in his heritage, to judge from his faintly luminous eyes and skills at gardening. And Khalil, a dark-complected child of 11 with a gaze that penetrated like acid-dripped arrows, who wanted to know everything. Morgrash spent weeks at a time in the village, running a special class consisting only of those three children, putting about the rumor that he was grooming them for positions high in the Empire. He grew fond of all three children. Though Xander's pacifism was simultaneously irksome and reassuring, a boy who refused to learn the combative arts was unlikely to kill him, true, but Morgrash had trouble comprehending the mindset. Meth had a fondness for setting fires and vivisecting small animals, and some of the local semi-sentients, so Morgrash tailored his curriculum to the destructive arts and the empirical sciences, while Khalil devoured history and statecraft books insatiably. One day, in a roundtable seminar, as they were discussing the social experiment of Progress Village and its sister settlements, Khalil cleared his throat.
After careful consideration, my lord,
I have a proposal. You should immediately abolish slavery.
What? Morgrash bellowed. That's madness! Slavery is the backbone of our economy!
But my lord, if you look over these figures, he said, pulling out a slate and making rapid chalk marks, you'll see that if you simply pay them low wages, institute a company store, and offer loans with, say, 20% interest compounded annually, you'll give your slaves freedom, something many of them clamor for, save wear and tear from whipping, while still retaining them in the workforce, and even making a profit from the usury. Morgresh pondered. His family had gotten their start as slavers, but times changed, didn't they? He sent Khalil's proposal to the empirical accountants. The theoretical accountants would have rejected it out of hand, and was only slightly surprised when they found the projections sound. Morgresh abolished slavery, retasked the overseers as floor, mine, and site managers, and set up an account for Khalil to receive a fraction of a percentage of the interest from the company stores as a reward. Before the boy was 15, he was richer than many of Morgrash's underlords.
You might have told me I couldn't have children.
Morgrash was drunk, leaning against a wall in the Sibyl's chambers, gulping from a jug of imported, fermented wool beast milk.
I married 15 wives before my personal physician dared to suggest the trouble might be mine.
He held his face in his hands and wept. The Sibyl sniffed from her shadows.
I foresaw that giving you more bad news would make you fill in the passage to my cavern with concrete.
This will be the doom of the Empire, not your prophecy. I have no successor.
Fool, the Sibyl said almost fondly, as if you've never heard of adoption.
Meth, Khalil, and Xander were all from poor families, and their parents were happy to let the Dark Lord adopt their sons. Not that they would have said anything if they disapproved. Morgrash told the boys they were moving to the Imperial City. Khalil barely looked up from his figures, just nodding briefly. Xander asked excitedly if the gardens were as grand as everyone said, and Meth asked how old you had to be to start pit fighting. Morgrash, to his surprise, enjoyed answering their questions and extolling the many virtues of the city that bore his name. And even Khalil seemed interested by the time the troop convoy drake landed on leathery wings to bear them away. The probability witches hit an impasse. Even after a year living in the palace, with the boys studying their passions, with the greatest tutors and accesses to the greatest libraries in the world, they couldn't tell which one was the prophesied threat. Morgresh went to visit the Sibyl, for the first time since embarrassing himself by crying in her presence.
Why can't they figure it out? He demanded. Which of my sons will betray me?
Hard to say, she said.
I see several paths. It's possible that this is a dynamic destiny, that it could be any of them. Kill two of them, and whichever one remains will be your undoing.
Your continued comfort and your collection of trinkets depend on my largesse,
he said, putting on his most threatening countenance, which had sent barbarian chieftains and effete overseas ambassadors alike into paroxysms of trouser-soaking terror.
You will give me guidance.
Make sure none of them have any reason to do you ill, she said. Just exactly what you've been doing. It won't neutralize the prophecy, but it may continue to push back the moment of betrayal until a point after you've died in some other less destiny-entangled way. It's the best I can do, my lord.
Fine, he said, glowering. I'll keep making their dreams come true.
The boys grew up. Xander spent almost all his time among the floating gardens and fell in love with a wisp woman, which seemed somewhat inevitable in retrospect. Meth trained with the most dangerous members of the slavering corps, and by all accounts held his own admirably well. When he wasn't studying the martial arts, he was in the basement with the automatists, delving into the secrets of life and death, and when he wasn't doing that, He was breaking the hearts of beautiful young men in the duelist's quarter. Khalil sat in with different magisters, surveyors, and advisors, learning the ins and outs of empire management. Always near Morgash's right hand, Khalil had made many good, practical contributions to running the empire. There were progress villages all over now, running different social experiments in parallel, with positive techniques exported empire-wide. Though the Dark Lord preferred the company of Meth, and they often went hunting and whoring, albeit in different wings of the brothels, together. When the boys attained their manhood and majority, the time came to give them all formal posts. Morgrash went to the Sybil again, pacing in her chamber and pondering the possibilities.
Meth seems the most likely to attempt a coup. He hungers for conquest. I fear he may be the one who turns on me.
You haven't conquered the entire world, the Sybil said. Give him something to do.
Morgrash called Meth to his war chamber.
How would you like to sail across the sea and conquer the jewel-rich lands of Lokulpul? It's a long journey, and there may be no coming back soon, as the barrier leviathans only sink below the waves and open a passage every few years.
They have strange martial arts there, don't they? Meth said. I've heard they can make a man's testicles recede permanently, just by poking two fingers into a nerve cluster. He flexed his hands experimentally. I wouldn't mind learning that.
Conquer them, and they'll teach you whatever you like. And I'll make you Governor General of any lands you take.
Meth embraced him.
I'll pack my bags.
Take Trepanna,
Morgrash said, tears threatening to rise for the second time in a decade.
I hear the skulls in Lokulpul are thick. And what of Xander? I can see him turning on me, too. He disapproves of the ravages of the Empire. He's already pushed me to stop strip mining, replant forests, release the wisp spoke from the ancient bindings. He won't attack me directly, but he might poison me, or send deadly venomous insects against me, or have his girlfriend attempt to possess me.
There hasn't been a life tree in the Empire since your great-great-grandfather's day, the Sybil remarked.
Morgrash called Xander to his rooftop garden, and among the fragrant carnivorous plants, embraced him.
My son, in the central plains, before my ancestors charred out the tree-dwelling natives, there was a sacred tree, and the whole of the plains were lush. Perhaps some seedling yet remains among the ashes. Would you be the equal of finding such a thing, and tending it to health?
I think it must be the work I was meant for, father, Xander said, eyes shining more than usual.
Morgrash had no family heirloom to give him, but he gave Xander's wisp form lover full citizenship status as a going-away present.
And Khalil, Khalil, Khalil. He is so full of ideas.
Alas, the Sybil said, I have no ideas about what to offer him.
Morgrash called Khalil to his throne room.
My son, would you like to be a diplomat? Head of the Secret Intelligence Services. Tell me your desire.
I wish only to implement the vision of the better empire you introduced with Progress Village, father.
Khalil's voice was full of reverent respect.
Your great experiments are glorious things.
I only instituted the programs to keep you and your brothers from killing me, Morgrash thought.
But he nodded.
Prime Minister, then. We've never had one, but I think you'd fit the job. Is there anything I can offer you as a gift for making an old man proud?
Only sufficient funding, father, he said, and Morgrash had to smile.
And so Morgrash ruled, though in practice Khalil did most of the ruling. And after a few years of relative boredom, Morgrash gave Khalil his proxy and visited Meth in the ruins of the Lokulpulian capital, where they got drunk together and pissed on the floor of the Senate singing bawdy songs. They harrowed the contested areas for a while, which Morcrash found more exhausting than he remembered, until the barrier leviathans opened another passage, and Morcrash said his farewells and returned home. When he got back to the Imperial City, 3 years later, things were running more smoothly than ever. Khalil had granted all the Wispworm people citizenship, banished the demonic engines below the Spiral Mountains, and replaced them with coal-fired plants, and instituted other, even vaster, reforms. "I apologize, Father," he said at their first meeting. "I knew my projections were sound, and that these changes would lead to greater prosperity, but I was afraid you wouldn't agree if I proposed them while you were here. Forgive me." Morgrash considered splitting Khalil's skull for the presumption, but he couldn't ignore the results. The Empire was richer than ever.
"I gave you my proxy," Morgrash said. "You are my son."
Khalil's way was not the family way, but perhaps, unbelievably, it was better. He visited the Sybil, who had not aged a day while he was gone.
"It's the succession, I fear,"
he said, having brooded over the subject during the long sea voyage.
"Brother against brother, the Empire thrown into chaos. All my work undone. Meph's warlike tendencies. Xander's gradually expanding zone of peace and green in the center of the Empire. Khalil's philosophical underpinnings. They're bound to collide."
"So, talk to them," the Sybil said.
"Unlike every man of line Morgrash before them, your sons are good at talking."
She paused.
"Except Meph. But he'll manage."
With the help of his witches, he called up images of Meph and Xander from their distant locales, and sat with Khalil in the throne room.
"I will not rule forever, and I do not wish to see my sons kill one another."
"Oh, we've worked that all out," Xander said. "I don't want to run the Empire. I'm happy with my trees. We've got two new seedlings this week."
"There's precious little killing to do back home,"
Meph said, raising his voice to be heard over the sounds of battle behind him.
"I'm content here, where there are still frontiers. Let Khalil run things there."
"This is so civilized," Morgrash said, unsure whether to be proud or disturbed.
"I will rule only with your blessing, Father," Khalil said.
"You have it, of course."
Khalil cleared his throat. "When do you think you might want to, retire, Father?"
"Retire? No Lord Morgrash has ever retired. We've always ended in blood and glory. Or at least blood."
"Well," Khalil said, "I respect the precedent, but do you want to end that way, Father? None of us wish you pain."
"I don't know what I want anymore,"
Morgrash said, and went away to think on it for a while.
"I was so sure I'd die in battle,"
the former Dark Lord said, sitting on the stone floor in the cold bleakness of the Sybil's chamber.
"Or at least be assassinated. Or possessed by a bodiless horror from the hell world next door. Something more traditional. Instead, this peaceful regime change. And no more slavery. No more strip mines. No more necromantic factories fueled by human suffering. I thought I was modern, but Khalil, great-grandfather, must be twirling in his crypt."
"I have heard rather more noise than usual from up there," the Sybil said. "What will you do now, Cirid?" He hadn't heard his given name in decades, and rather liked the sound of it.
"Khalil says I'm welcome to stay here. He loves me, the beast. But I'd feel useless. All these years I thought I'd outsmarted you. Found a way around your prophecy. But you were right. That child did take my empire away from me. He did overthrow my ways and means. And he will indeed see me leave these halls behind forever."
"Where will you go?"
"I don't know. I thought of going to the provinces, raising an army of snake men and omniphages, and trying to overthrow Khalil. Just to keep myself occupied. But the Empire is better under his leadership. And I think I'm too old to lead monster men. And the worst of it is, I don't even mind being sidelined.
I understand. I'm leaving too, the Sybil said. Morgresh blinked.
You've been down here since this place was just a crack in the earth.
Yes, but I can see the future. In glimpses. And in those glimpses, I'm no longer consulted. Khalil doesn't need me. He has probability witches and the surveying corps and 10-year plans. My time is done. And you know, I have all these souvenirs from the world beyond. But I haven't been anywhere. I was thinking of going to one of the little islands in the Lambient Sea, where you can hear the chanting of the dead sailors under the waves and watch the witch lights in the water each evening. I think I might have come from there originally.
You don't remember?
I see the future betimes, but the past is mostly lost to me.
Morgresh felt his hand creep across the floor, almost of its own volition, and touched the Sybil's long, delicate fingers.
I've always liked the islands. A simple house among the palms. It sounds pleasant.
It will be, the Sybil said, entwining her fingers with his.
And welcome back. I hope you liked the story. This one grabbed me right away with its humorous mesh of the modern and medieval. And despite its sharp wit, Tim Pratt never loses sight of his characters in reaching for a joke. His prose is perfectly paired with Cheyenne Wright's rich narration and voice work, all coming together to hopefully give you a warm and welcome departure from our current Dungeons existence. That was our show for this week. On behalf of everyone here at Podcastle, our audio engineer, Peter Barovich, our forum moderator, AussieCat, your co-editors, Sheree Clark and Jen Albert, host and assistant editor Setsu Uzume, as well as our amazing first readers, Matt Dovey, Aidan Doyle, Amalia Harrington, Kai Hudson, Devin Martin, Catherine McMahon, Ace Ratcliffe, Julian Jarbo, Craig Jackson, Julia Pat, Eleanor Wood, and me, Hamilton Perez. Thanks for letting us share another story with you. Podcastle is part of Escape Artists Incorporated and is distributed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative 4.0 International License. Feel free to share it, but don't sell it or change it. If you like what you heard, head over to patreon.com/EAPodcasts and subscribe. We'll be back next week with another tale. Until then, this is Hamilton Perez, reminding you that someone really needs to come by and open the trap door. See you then.